exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to IRIB English Radio. The program is The Gate of Knowledge, and this is your host, Sayyid Salman Naqavi. We are discussing the wise sayings of the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, from the Nahj al-Balagha. And in the previous episodes, we were talking about the wonderful creation of the human being and the facts about this his creation by Allah Almighty in a very beautiful way, in a wonderful way. And the Master of the Faithful says, يَعْجِبُ لِهَذَا الْإِنسَانِ, take wonder at this, at the creation of this human being by Allah Almighty, such a beautiful creation of Allah Almighty, the manifestation of His power and knowledge, that He yanzuru bi shahmin, looks through the eyes which are created of fatty tissue. We mentioned about this and talked about it in a little detail. وَيَتَكَلَّمُ بِلَحْمٍ, the second part, that He speaks through the tongue, the wonderful fleshy part of the inside the mouth, which creates sounds and voices and the language, the way how we communicate is a beautiful way of doing so. And وَيَسْمَعُ بِعَزْمٍ, we talked about that He hears through the ears. And then he says it is through the bone. يَسْمَعُ بِعَزْمٍ, so where is the bone? Today science has told us that inside the inner ear there is a very small, minute, two small bones that are working to create, change the sound waves into pulses that can be understood by the brain, and the voices can be transformed into the brain through those, with the help of those bones. So this is what we discussed in the previous episode, which we shall continue in the next segment.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Welcome back to IRIB English Radio, The Gate of Knowledge, with your host Sayyid Salman Naqavi. We are talking about the wonderful creation of the human being, the four aspects. The first was the eyes, the second the tongue, the third the ears, the fourth وَيَتَنَفَّسُ مِنْ خَرْمٍ, he breathes through holes, through the nostrils. And as we know, we have the nose that has been created for this purpose, for the two nostrils we have. And we are in the skull, in the bones behind it, there are small two holes that lead into the respiratory system, into the lungs. And we normally should be breathing and inhaling through the nose. That is the proper place from where it should be carried out. Of course, some people breathe through the mouth, but that's not it's not the proper way to do so. Sometimes the nostrils are choked up, therefore we are forced to breathe through the mouth. But it is the proper way is to do so through using the nose. And the inhalation is through the nose, through the nostrils, and the exhalation is through the mouth. So this section, this part And we're talking about yatanafasu min kharmin is also pointing to the way that the respiratory system works and the breathing takes place. Breathing is a very important aspect of human life. Without breathing, the sustenance of life is not possible. Oxygen is a requirement for the human body, and it is through these, through the nose that it takes place, through the nostrils. And maybe breathing through the mouth may be sometimes harmful. So the proper way is through the nostrils. And within the nostrils, within the nose, you have small hairs. These hairs collect the dust particles and other things which are maybe harmful for the human body. So therefore, there is a protective system within the nostrils also, which takes care that things which are not which are not useful or harmful, they are harmful for the human body, they are not taken inside the respiratory system. So here we are talking about the nose, which and there we also have the wetty saliva, maybe things coming out which remove that dust also. So that is also an important aspect of the nostrils. So let us continue in the next segment.
Sayyid Razi, also known as Sharif Razi, a religious scholar and theologian, holds a significant place in Islamic history for his invaluable contribution to the compilation of Imam Ali's profound teachings and speeches, which were later compiled into the influential literary work known as Nahjul Balagha.
Welcome back to IIIB English Radio, The Gate of Knowledge. So we were discussing the hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam, where he's talking about the wonderful creation of the human being, and he mentions that these beautiful things have been created by Allah Almighty, and the intricacies of these four aspects, the four parts, the eyes, the tongue, the ears, the nostrils, taking care of the, are placed in our head, in our face. So this is a very important feature of the human body. And all of these things are provided for by Allah Almighty. And everything is taken care of in very minute details, or many of those things which we are still discovering them. And the whole human body has not been, you have not been able to explore all the minute details that are there. When we talk about the nostrils and the nose, we're not only just talking about breathing, we're also talking about the sense of smell and the sense that we can take the pleasure of smelling, or maybe the obnoxious things that we smell, they are through the nostrils, through the nose. So the nose, like the other parts, played manifold functions that are very important for the sustenance and the continuation of the human life on this earth. So with this, we conclude the discussion on this hadith. This is your host, Sayyid Salman Naqvi. The program is The Gate of Knowledge from IIIB English Radio. Saying goodbye until the next episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
حين دعاه
challenge of suffer in my worry kindles my mind. Oh. Good morning to all our listeners. You are tuned into Iran Radio broadcasting from Tehran. We are very glad to have you with us. I'm your presenter for the next hour. And here are some interesting facts about Islam. Inventions that emerge from the Islamic world include the discovery of Critic acid, Jaber ibn Hayyan, architecture, the minaret, the bridge mill, the vertical axle windmill, teaching hospitals, marching bands, early torpedoes, the guitar, the lute, the water pipe, also known as hookah, early attempts at gliding, algebra, the pinhole camera, the laws of refraction of light in optic,
coffee, and more. Muslim scholar Ibn Haytham, known as Al-Hazen in Europe, who was born in 965 AD, formulated the scientific method and has been referred to as the world's first true scientist. He is also often regarded as the first theoretical physicist, making a significant contribution to the theory of light and optics. Additionally, he developed what is called celestial mechanics, which led to the eventual work of Europeans such as Copernicus, Galileo, Johannes Kepler, and Isaac Newton. You are listening to the continuation of Iran Radio. We start this hour's lineup with A to Z of Life. The program presents an Islamic Iranian lifestyle in a variety of ways, making use of the ayahs of the Holy Quran as well as inspirational poetry and stories. They will be followed by our varied radio productions feature. And we finish off this hour's programs with Muslim Lady, the quintessential radio program for Muslim women. The program deals with a variety of subjects in relation to Muslim women. Stay with us for the next hour.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Don't Disturb Mother. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z here on I'm English Radio with my sister Zainab. And obviously the not disturbing mother, not disturbing our mother, the mother, first of all, I'd say this goes towards the idea that we have this huge respect for women in general, but then especially for our mothers, given that we all know very well that heaven lies at the feet of the mother. So obviously this is something quite special, and obviously in a sense we're supposed to be even more aware, even more sensitive towards the needs of the mother, because when we compare mother and father, we're always told and we're always taught that the mother is more sensitive, the mother is more emotional, and if anything, we should try to satisfy the needs of the mother even over and above the father. And you might observe this anyway in your families. The father will urge everyone to sort of be especially considerate towards the mother. So I just want to give the example from life of one of the famous martyrs of the Holy Defense, Ibrahim Hadi. So he was particularly respectful towards his mother, towards all his female family members, and for sure towards women in society in general. So he was especially careful not to bother his mother. So as an example, if he had been out with maybe just engaged in some of the activities before the revolution, and then also maybe just sort of meeting up with some of his friends, and if he was getting back to the house a bit late, let's say after midnight, 1 a.m, he wouldn't even ring the doorbell because he didn't want to wake his mother up. So what he would do instead, he'd actually sometimes just go to the local mosque and sort of lie down there so he didn't disturb anyone in his house. And then that obviously meant that he was right there for Fajr prayer as well. Welcome back to A to Z here on I'm Being Shred with me, Sister Zainab. And also I'm talking about this idea that we should pay special attention towards the needs of the mother. And obviously I've mentioned how Martyr Ibrahim Hadi wouldn't even ring the doorbell when it got to be sort of late at night and he was coming back a bit late. And I'm just wondering how many of us have been that considerate towards our family or especially our mothers. You know, obviously many of us, if we've been out, maybe if we're still living with our family, you know, we don't have to ring the doorbell because we've got a set of spare keys. But if you just think to yourself, even just, you know, trying opening the door, just the sound of the keys in the door and that the opening of the door and the closing of the door can, with some people, be enough to even wake them up out of their sleep. So These are other issues. How much can we do to really be considerate other people? What can we do to be more considerate of our mothers in particular? So what does that mean? Obviously that would mean in this sort of situation that for sure, if we're coming back late and we are sort of visiting our parents, our mother are still living in the house, we do not make noise. So we do not, if we've come back, a friend is bringing us back, we don't start talking to a friend outside our parents' house or outside the apartment door, for example. And we certainly don't make a lot of noise trying to open the door. So everything has to be very quiet. But obviously, I think you get the idea. This just extends to general consideration. And obviously, I will also just bring in the reminder that the duties that we have towards our parents and especially our mother, I always say especially our mothers, is to treat them with kindness, not just while they're still quite young, but especially as they get older. We should not voice any sort of word of displeasure or discontent. So I pray that these are reminders for all of us, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of HZ here on I'm Being Radio, and farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.aranradio.ir.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
The ancient city of Hafshedon is a good place for archaeology enthusiasts to pay a visit. According to the findings of the excavations that have taken place in some of these old mountains, people have been living in this area for about 9,000 years. And so the city of Hafshedon is considered to be one of the first settlements of the New Stone Age.
The city of Hafshedon, also known as the city of industrialists, is in the southwest of Iran, 12 kilometers from the city of Shahrekord. Hafshedon is in the second largest valley of the province of Charmahal Bakhtiari at the foot of the beautiful Jahanbin Mountain. According to the locals, the city of Hafshedon has an invaluable heritage left behind from lost civilizations, and to see these historical treasures, we're heading towards the Jahanbin Mountain. Our Hafshedoni friends told us that we had 2 hours worth of hard hiking ahead of us, so we decided to make a quick stop at a nearby spring and fill our bottles with its fresh and cool water before heading out again. No pain, no gain, I suppose. Every single time we felt we'd had enough, the thought of what we were going to see once we arrived kept us moving, until we finally reached the Ganavishte inscription. Unfortunately, because of the ever-changing climate, the scorching hot sun, and the freezing snow, the symbols are mostly gone. Happy that we got to see an ancient relic before it was totally destroyed, we headed towards our next destination, a place said to be nature's playground, the Shahmanzar Mountain.
On our way up to the Shahmanzar Mountain, we were promised that we'd be able to see some of the most amazing views Hafsherjan has to offer. And they were right. Nature is amazing and playful at times. If you look over there, next to each other, you'll be able to see two figures. One could be an elephant and one a buffalo. I'm sure that if you use your imagination and look all over this place, you'll be able to find many more.
Let your imagination run wild. That's what we were told. If we had gone further up the mountain, we would have definitely seen more of nature's artistry. But you would have had to have the eye and the heart for it. Feel the force around you, so to say. And the last but not least location we'll pay a visit to is the Iskandari Hill in Hafsherjan. This is the first and largest national historical site in the province of Charmahola Bakhtiari. Based on the remnants of pottery that were discovered on this site and around it, it is estimated that it dates back to about 9,000 years ago and probably had a structural form similar to a ziggurat. This is the end of our journey, but there is still so much more to be seen. I guess we'll leave the rest to you. This is Gulnar Fanoudi for Iran.
Most objects made from clay touch us so deeply. What's so special about them? Why is a jar, a plate, a pot, or even this little fish made from clay so evocative? Well, for starters, they're made from the essence of life, fire, earth, and water. You see, this is life itself, and I can feel her little heart beating. A ceramic workshop belonging to a friend was probably the best place I could learn more about the art of ceramics. A two-story working studio that throws you into the land of pottery, where all is plates, platters, dishes, bowls, jars and mugs made from clay. I call them artworks and handmade treasures. Excavations show that the art of pottery dates back to the 7th and 8th millennium BC in Iran. As time went on and techniques improved, this art form reached new heights and masterpieces were created. The masterful brushstrokes of the Iranians on the ceramic works were the true narrators of the people's stories, their culture, customs, way of life, taste, talents, religious beliefs, and of course, their prayers. Azadeh wanted to draw more attention to the art of ceramics, and so she decided to bring various artists together to paint on a ceramic plate. In the exhibition, around 250 artists took part, each displaying their own unique ceramic plate. The event was warmly received by the people. It was very interesting to see how a simple ceramic plate could produce an endless possibility of designs and forms that reflected the emotions of its creator. Each plate was unique and amazing because as you stood there watching the brushstrokes, you could hear it whispering, telling you little secrets of the artist that brought it to life. Let me tell you something interesting. Each artist was given one and only one plate to paint on. Sounds challenging. Well, they all took up the challenge and created their own unique ceramic painting that told their own story. A challenging experience, but at the same time, intriguing. Working with clay, with the elements of life, must surely be enjoyable. And life's all about that. After all, as Omar Khayyam, Iran's prominent poet, puts it, "And strange to tell, among the earthen lot, some could articulate while others not. And suddenly, one more impatient cried, 'Who is the potter, pray, and who the pot?'" Oda Lezgi for Iran.
a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Asma. I have the honor to be your host once more, and you are listening to Muslim Lady. This is the cozy corner for all the ladies out there. Wherever you are, I hope you're doing just well. So, as usual, we have our very dear lady to help us with the insights, and she is Sister Zainab. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming here.
I am Tarfadlan Zainab Askari, actually from Kashmir, and I've been studying Hausa here for the last 10 years, and I'm also authoring one or two books on Muslim Lady.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for coming here and for cooperating. So we have numerous narrations, encouraging the families to go for the proposers who actually have got the best manners and they are religious people. I would ask you a personal question. Imagine for your future girl, there comes a proposer. One of them, one of the proposers, is wealthy, yet you're not sure about their religion. The other one is actually not wealthy, but very religious. And when I say religious, don't take that literal, because sometimes religiosity does not show on your appearance, and it is in the way you act.
In your conduct.
Yeah, in your conduct, actually. Which one would you rather to pick for your daughter? Or encourage her to go for that one.
Of course, what Lady Khadija salamu alayha did. She was a business tycoon herself. And
she was already wealthy.
Yeah, she was already wealthy, and she always had wealthy suitors for her.
Exactly.
But then the one she chose was because of the religion, and not again on the apparent basis, but in his conduct during the business trip they had, and the way she saw, like, how faithful.
So
sometimes
her criterion was actually the trustworthiness of the prophet.
Yes, so yeah, definitely, like, if I was at that place, I would definitely, like, if today we have the same situation, I would definitely go with the same thing. Like, I remember even like when my husband's family came as suitors for me, we had many people before that, and like somewhere like working in the UAE, somewhere working in other Middle Eastern countries, and this was not the first one like who was studying abroad or something. Like they were like quite wealthy than him. The thing that my father liked was, well, my father was standing at the door, and his sister, she said, "Ya Allah," like, rather than telling him, like, "Excuse me, can you go get aside, or I want to get inside." And my father was really impressed with this, and he said, like, "Did you notice, like, she didn't talk to me, she didn't tell me, can you get aside, excuse me, or something." And the beautiful thing she said, "Ya Allah," and how, you know, spiritual our home became by this "Ya Allah," and how spiritual this marriage can be. And a lot of things, like, later on, like, when he saw my husband for the first time, they went outside together, and then they were driving, and he stops at one of the roads, and then he picks up the stone, keeps it aside while he had already crossed the road. And my father was like, "See, like, we had crossed, but yet, like, so that others do not get into trouble, I'm like, I am okay with this person. I know that they are not much financially."
But do you think that everybody is like, I just want to be more realistic. Like, in today's world, for girls, if they are given the choice of the wealthy man who is not religious apparently, and then the other man who is religious yet unwealthy, they wouldn't.
Which is very common, actually.
Yeah, which is very common. They wouldn't actually go for the religious one. And then they would tell you, Why do we have to care for religiosity? I want to clarify this point that why spirituality of a person, why the religiosity of a person is very important.
It is the basic criterion to choose a spouse in Islamic teachings. Like, according to the Holy Quran, the most important criterion for a suitable spouse is faith. And there are so many other things, like, you know, there are so many other criteria, like how much importance they give to the acts of worship, what is the family background, and the righteous friends. Friends are very important. Like, it's also seen, like, what kind of friends he hangs out with, and also they should have appropriate dress, appropriate character, modest. Modesty, where does that modesty, where does your dressing sense comes from? The religion, and all the differences I think people have over is the religion things.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back, dear ladies. I hope you're still following us and the insights Sister Zainab is sharing with us about the topic of marrying the one who is already a religious man and not necessarily a wealthy man, apparently, by the way. So you're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Asma, and Sister Zainab is here, and she's talking about the fact that religiosity and the spirituality of a man is all that a woman must search for.
Yeah, I think because the religion gives you the path, and because of religion you are able to decide, like, when you wake up, when you sleep, how you wake up, how you sleep.
It gives you a conduct book.
Complete conduct book.
Yeah, so for the question I asked, for the girl who comes to you and then tells you, why do I have to care for religiosity of a man? Isn't humanity enough?
I would say the...
Because, you know, in today's world, in the modern world, we have this religion of humanity.
Yeah, unfortunately, because I think the goal has been just this world. Like, it's important to take blessings from this world and use them and to work and to, you know, provide sustenance for your family. Everything is important, but this world should not be the ultimate goal. Those who look at this world as an ultimate goal, they get stuck. For example, it said that, it's a beautiful story, it said that there was a man who fell in a well, but he holds a rope, and down in the well, there's a big snake whose mouth is open. And above the well, there are two mouses, black and white, and they are trying to cut the rope. And now he's confused, and all of a sudden he sees the honey on the side of a well, and he gets, you know, he gets distracted with the honey. And this is dunya. This is the world. This is the attractions of the world. This is that humanity. This is that wealthiness and all. The black and white masses represent the day and night, and this rope is your life.
Exactly.
And the snake, or, you know, with open mouth down in the well, is the grave, right? So this should not be forgotten. Like, our ultimate destiny is somewhere else. What I have to take there, like, how much wealth I will
do not be distracted by the honey.
Yeah.
And because eventually you're going to end up in that snake's mouth.
And I think the more the religion makes you human, the humanity itself won't be able to make you more human. So, like, religion is all about humanity.
And we have to note that humanity has got some borders, and to some extent it might be selfish at some points because it is humanity. But religion does not have any selfishness in itself.
Right. And it does not contradict with humanity at, like, many stages.
It includes humanity. But humanity in itself may not include religiosity and spirituality.
Exactly. So this makes it quite important. And I would also say, like, why is it important? Like, for example, since the culture we come from, for example, you might have known that India is a country which has got most of the religions of the world.
Yeah.
Right? So There are so many interfaith marriages there. We witnessed that. I personally come from Kashmir, and in Kashmir we have like 90% of Muslims. For example, okay, love conquers all, up to when? Like if you have, if you try to go through it like very, very positively, still, till the moment you have a child, then the naming of a child, then rearing a child.
Oh yeah, the
so
upbringing of the child.
Exactly, like we witnessed. And then like when my mother's friend used to say this very beautiful thing, and this is so true, I would like to quote her. She would say that, and I was once talking to her on phone, and I was like, what happens to that love concourse all things, and why does that love disappear after?
It has a limit.
After things start, you know, showing themselves up, after like people face realistic things in their lives. And she was like, love before marriage is exactly like the soda water. There are these beautiful bubbles and that pop up.
Well, that's a very beautiful analogy.
Yeah. And those bubbles do pop up once they are into the marriage. So don't think about what happened to that love. That was not love. That was a soda water. And literally it is. We have seen that. So before this, you know, before you're getting for intercommunity marriage or interfaith marriage, you should definitely see that. Is that a soda water or something like that? Because everything starts with your gaze. And in Quran, we have been told, lower your gaze. First to men and then to believing women. They are told to cover themselves in a way. And if that thing is practiced, actually, you know, nothing like that, the love before marriage would appear. And actual love happens basically after marriage.
Until there would be no persistent temptation, like, to get into something that you shouldn't get into.
Yeah, because, like, before that, people try to show you only the best version of themselves. They would never tell you where do they, how unorganized they are. They would never show you where do they throw their socks when they come home. They would never show you any other, you know, all those flaws.
The unmasked version of themselves.
Exactly.
Like us human beings, we have many masks on our faces.
Mm-hmm.
But these masks are going to be put off of our face.
Yeah.
Right at the moment when we get into the same house, the same room, like having constant interaction with each other, that would be once I little by little start to mask off.
Exactly. And if that pops up like that bubble, it's as Shakespeare says, love is not love which alters when it alters and finds.
Exactly. Very true. Religiosity is important even for those people who do not believe that religion is an important factor. Why? Because those who believe in a religion, they've got a God who believe that he's watching over them. And since that Almighty is watching over them, they would be very careful of and cautious of every single step they take. So the person who's already aware of an Almighty is technically more trustworthy than the one who does not believe in any other, in any actually superpower, in any Almighty.
Right.
So these guys would be pretty much more human in the sense of humanity, like they would be caring more for humanity because these are the precious creatures of God. They would take more care of you as their spouses. So yes, thank you, Sister Zainab, and thank you, dear ladies. This was all the time that we had for today. I hope you have enjoyed that. Until another episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
morning to you all. You are tuned in to Iran Radio, broadcasting from Tehran, and we are very glad to have you with us. I'm your host for the next hour. We start this hour's lineup with our radio productions feature. After that, we have Spotlight. This is a daily program which covers the most important events happening in the world today. And we round up this hour's programs with Ulema's speech. In this program, we broadcast excerpts from the speeches of well-known and reputable Islamic scholars. Stay with us.
Eric Garner went unconscious.
Cops use of a chokehold that allegedly led to Eric's chokehold.
And me and my brothers and sisters sat around the computer, watched the video, and it changed our lives forever. I couldn't stop wondering why. I was screaming at the TV.
His death not being called a homicide.
In a matter of seconds, you see him, you know, being killed, murdered right before our eyes.
A Staten Island grand jury has decided not to indict an NYPD officer in the death of a man on Staten Island.
These police officers in riot gear trying to hold this position at Camden and Howard. The protesters are basically right in their faces.
Protesters in Minneapolis have attempted to shut down the city's airport this afternoon. The group representing the Black Lives Matter movement blocked two roads outside a terminal before state police ordered the group to disperse.
Back to the situation in downtown Los Angeles, but protesters have moved now onto the 101 freeway in downtown.
Earlier in the day, organizers of the group promised that a demonstration involving hundreds of protesters would shut down the Mall of America.
You know, I don't remember the kind of life before what's going on. Like, you know, all of my activities have to do with basically what we call the revolution. You kind of just dive in it head first. It's like, so you can't stop. And, you know, I feel like if I stop this time, I can no longer complain about anyone that's murdered unarmed after, you know, Akai Gurley and Eric Garner and Mike Brown. So I have to keep going with this. Martin Luther King, I mean, he was in the movement for 13 years before he was assassinated, so... it's not something that's going to be overnight. The significance to me of Black Lives Matter is that it's something that's nationwide. It's not just a New York problem. It's a New Jersey problem. It's across the United States. And, you know, Black Lives Matter is basically calling attention that, hey, you know, you say that all lives matter. And yes, all lives matter, but Black lives aren't mattering right now. So that's what we're trying to let you guys know is, hey, you know, hi, Black Lives Matter, you know, we're being kind of hunted, and it's a little bit of a pattern. At first, you know, people could say maybe it was a coincidence, but now it's just a pattern. And it's almost like every year there's some, you know, publicly broadcasted, you know, murder of an unarmed African-American or brown person.
Well, I moved to New York in November for work. I'm an attorney. I work in banking and financial compliance. But I've always been really active outside of work in, like, activists and social justice missions. I don't think people want to confront the issue that there's an issue with our system, that our police, not all of them, but there are some within those ranks, are brutalizing and terrorizing American citizens. And so I believe in our Constitution. I do believe in our criminal justice system. I think it, you know, it has the potential to be a great system, but the corruption within it and the bias within it makes it a very dangerous system for black and brown people.
Our justice system is not corrupt. It's just very decentralized in comparison to other democratic countries. And when it's decentralized, it's based on a variety of standards for people who are part of the system. And some of the standards are not as high as we would like them to see. And then people paint with a very broad brush, extrapolating from one jurisdiction to another. Definitely we have race issues in our society, not just in the United States, in many other countries. Police officers are recruited from the society and from the community. So there's no doubt in my mind that some of the officers have various biases.
On February 26, 2012, in Sanford, Florida, Trayvon Martin, an unarmed 17-year-old high school student coming home from a nearby convenience store, was fatally shot by George Zimmerman, a neighborhood watch captain. Martin died from a single gunshot wound to the chest. When police arrived at the scene, Zimmerman admitted that he shot Martin, but he claimed he had acted in self-defense. No charges were initially brought against Zimmerman. It was not until the shooting garnered national attention that Zimmerman was charged in connection with Martin's death. In July 2013, a jury acquitted Zimmerman of all charges. Upon the not guilty verdict, there were protests nationwide in more than 100 cities. President Obama said that he identified with the boy. Trayvon Martin could have been me 35 years ago.
Why was it that Trayvon tended to fizzle out? One reason. Toward what? Laws. Stand your ground. It wasn't geared toward the powers that be. It wasn't geared toward the federal government. It wasn't geared toward the White House. It was geared toward state laws. Well, why is that so? Well, that's exactly what the powers that be wanted it to be. You see, the president's office, what did he do? He sent his own extension, who was Sharpton. And Sharpton gives a great speech, and it's all about state laws rather than police going to jail. Everybody knows that you're not going to change arbitrary police power until policemen start going.